quick note that this episode contains adult language and may not be suitable for everyone. It's February 1987 in Burbank, California. Arsenio Hall is at the dry cleaners, picking up his charcoal gray Armani suit. He pays and heads out into the parking lot. As he gets close to his ride, he can hear his car phone ringing. Hall glances at the caller ID. It's his manager.
What up?
What are you doing right now?
Nothing. Just grabbed my suit from the cleaners. Thinking about lunch at Fatburger. What are you up to?
Forget about Fatburger. Get over to the Fox lot. They want you to guest host on The Late Show tonight.
Since firing host Joan Rivers from her talk show 2 weeks ago, Fox has been filling the host seat with substitutes. Hall appeared on one of Rivers' final segments and did well. Okay, I'm on my way. Since he arrived in Hollywood from Cleveland at age 22, Hall's been busy building a name. He's headlining top comedy clubs, opening for big musical acts, and appearing on TV whenever he can. But now he's 31, and he needs something solid to click. Speeding to the Fox studio, Hall tries to wrap his head around what he's about to do. Host a talk show that's in direct competition with his idol, Johnny Carson. Hall grew up watching The Tonight Show and dreamed about someday doing exactly what Johnny does. Just a few months ago, he was on the NBC lot to tape a game show. Since he was already there, Hall snuck onto the dark, empty Tonight Show set. He sat behind Carson's desk and pretended to be Johnny interviewing Cher. Now, he's on his way to making that a reality, if only for one night. His car phone rings, startling Hall back to reality. It's his agent again. Please don't tell me they canceled.
No way. Just keep in mind that the Fox people like you a lot. I just found out they're looking for a host to fill the last 11 weeks of Rivers' contract. I think you have a good chance at that.
That night, in front of the cameras, Hall radiates energy. The audience loves him. He blows away the Fox executives and nails the hosting job. He's young, brash, charming, and black. A blast of fresh air in the white-dominated talk show world. He appeals to the hip, urban 12 to 34-year-old demographic that can't relate to Carson's old-school shtick or Letterman's cynical crank vibe. Fox rival Paramount Television, the TV production and distribution wing of Paramount Pictures, offers Hall his own late-night syndicated talk show. He accepts, entering the battleground where so many have failed. It's a kingdom ruled by the man he respects more than anyone in the business, Johnny Carson. And the fight is about to get ugly.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts. From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars.
Thank you.
On the last episode, NBC turned low-rent late-night television into prime real estate with the launch of The Tonight Show in 1954. 8 years later, Johnny Carson took the host seat and became a phenomenon, holding sway for three decades. But as the 1990s approach, change is in the air at NBC. Carson is nearing the end of his reign, but the network hasn't yet settled on his successor. And the competition is heating up. Rival networks CBS and ABC want a piece of the lucrative late-night territory. But Arsenio Hall has the inside track, posing the first serious challenge to Carson. This is Episode 3, Late Night Explodes. It's August 1989 at CBS's Television City headquarters in Los Angeles. Rod Perth is the network's new senior vice president of late-night programming. It's his job to salvage CBS's struggling late-night slot. He's standing in the studio hallway with one of his executives, watching the network's answer to Johnny Carson leave the studio. Perth is not happy. He looks at his watch. It's 6:45.
Well, there goes Sajak. The show's barely over, and he's out the door, heading home.
That's Wheel of Fortune host Pat Sajak. For the last 8 months, he's hosted the Pat Sajak Show. He's smart, quick, and affable. But as far as Perth is concerned, Sajak's putting in the minimum effort, doing a pale imitation of Carson. And the audience knows it.
This is pathetic. His ratings are in free fall. We're getting beaten by Letterman, Carson, and even Nightline, for God's sake. Not to mention Arsenio over at Fox. Our affiliates are jumping ship like crazy for his show. 50 of them have dumped Sajak already. If they all start running to Arsenio, CBS will never have a competitive late-night show. And Sajak is oblivious. Won't tweak the show, won't change a thing. I knew this guy was a mistake.
It's rumored that Carson might leave tonight within a year, maybe two. The CBS plan was for Sajak to hijack its audience from NBC. But that won't work if Sajak is just phoning it in.
There's only one thing to do. Find a new host who can compete with Arsenio. Yeah, Sajak's got to go, but, who the hell can we get?
Perth is in a difficult position. Arsenio is airing on 175 stations across the country. Carson is on 208. But Hall's crossover appeal is tremendous. Half of his audience is female, which advertisers love. He's also captured young and upscale fans of all races in urban and rural markets. His meteoric success takes people by surprise, including superstar shock jock Howard Stern.
I don't watch the show because I usually go to bed early.
You don't mind if I just sit and listen to you?
No, as a matter of fact, I don't even want you to interview me. Because I'll be honest with you, I don't know who Arsenio is. I'll be honest with you, I never heard of him.
It's just another black man making more money than you.
Yeah, I know.
When the New York Times asks Hall to explain his success, he says that, unlike other late-night rivals, he never tried to fill Johnny's shoes. Why try to take Johnny's audience? I just want the kids. He's offering a new niche for an MTV-age crowd. It's a savvy programming maneuver, given that the three major networks are now competing with video, satellite TV, and cable stations. Viewers have a lot more entertainment choices. Now, Perth needs to find someone for CBS's barren late-night slot who can go up against Arsenio's devoted youth army and Carson's aging but loyal fan base. Perth's been through dozens of names, but only one stands out. It's a September weekday morning in 1989 in the CBS parking lot. Rod Perth is dressed in his usual conservative business suit and tie. But he's not headed for the boardroom. He's straddling a vintage Triumph Bonneville motorcycle, about to ride down Sunset Boulevard to a home in Beverly Hills. The bike is a gift he wants to deliver personally, an offering to entice the only man who can keep CBS in the late night competition, Jay Leno. 15 minutes later, Perth guns the bike up the long brick driveway of Leno's Tudor mansion. The driveway leads to a 12-car garage. Leno is a car and motorcycle fanatic. Other than comedy, it's what he lives for. Leno emerges from the garage in greasy coveralls and stares at the Triumph.
Holy mackerel, Rod, this thing is beautiful.
As he circles the bike, Leno notices a small plaque on the gas tank. He bends down to read it.
To JL, crank it on up and ride to CBS forever. Huh, what's this all about, Rod?
It's a little gesture from the network, Jay. We'd love for you to work for us, and we want you to know we're serious.
For the last 4 years, Leno has been the permanent guest host of The Tonight Show, filling in for Carson during his ever-increasing nights off. Under Leno's contract with NBC, he gets $1 million a year. Perth thinks that NBC is being cheap. He also knows that if NBC gets wind of CBS's interest in stealing Leno, NBC will sweeten their offer. The motorcycle is an opening maneuver, an attempt to go straight to Leno's heart while keeping things on the down low and sidestepping any business negotiations.
Wow. I don't know what to say.
You don't have to say anything, Jay. Just think about it.
I'm pretty tied to NBC, but... Well, I will, Rod. I sure will.
Great, great, great. Here are the keys. Now, if you don't mind, can you give me a ride back to work?
Like David Letterman, Jay Leno clings tightly to a dream he's had most of his life, to take over The Tonight Show. For both men, it's practically a spiritual quest. Leno has risen to the top in stand-up comedy, doing hundreds of gigs a year, even while regularly guest hosting for Carson. He's loyal to NBC and beloved by the affiliates. He'll fly to Kalamazoo or Anchorage or anywhere else to schmooze with local station bosses, something the NBC brass loves. Getting him to part with the network isn't going to be easy. 2 weeks after the motorcycle offering, Rod Perth and CBS president Howard Stringer meet with Leno's tough-as-nails manager, Helen Kushnick. Stringer makes a serious offer, a 3-year contract at $6 million annually. He'll be on CBS at 11:30, opposite The Tonight Show. And he'll start in September 1990, less than a year away. Kushnick is impressed. These guys aren't just testing the water. Besides, she's losing patience with NBC, dragging their feet on when Leno will officially be named Carson's replacement. She wants Leno behind a late-night desk immediately, with her as executive producer. And it sure as hell doesn't have to be at NBC. CBS will do just fine. Helen Kushnick is sitting in the back booth of a Burbank deli watching Leno devour a corned beef sandwich. She's called a meeting to discuss the CBS offer, but her client seems more interested in his meal.
Christ, Jay, have you got enough food in your stomach yet to pay attention to business for a minute?
Sure, Helen. What's up with CBS?
Kushnick explains the details. Leno finally stops chewing.
Well, that's a hell of an offer, but I don't just want to go to CBS. I want The Tonight Show when Johnny leaves.
But who knows when that old fart will quit. And NBC doesn't have the balls to cut him loose. With CBS, you start right away. And the money's damn good.
Sorry, Helen, but I just don't want to go on up against Dave or Johnny. Dave's a pal, and I respect the hell out of Johnny. He gave me my break. I don't want to look like a bad guy. And the CBS show, that's just Pat Sajak's leftovers.
Kushnick shakes her head like a long-suffering mother.
You're too goddamn sweet for your own good, Jay.
Leno picks up his sandwich and smiles.
And that's why I have you, Helen.
December 1989. Helen Kushnick brushes past the receptionist and staffers, trying to run interference at NBC headquarters in Burbank. Helen Kushnick has no use for anyone in the executive offices at NBC, apart from one man, Brandon Tartikoff. The head of the network's entertainment division is young likable, and extremely successful. He's the shrewd dealmaker behind hit shows like Seinfeld, Cheers, and Law & Order. He's also personally close with Carson, Letterman, and Leno. Tartikoff has always played fair with Kushnick. Now, she's headed to his office to keep the game going. Hey, good to see you, Helen. Come in. What's today's battle?
I've got a firm offer from CBS for Jay to start there at 11:30 next September. Right up against your sacred Carson.
Tartikoff swallows. Now, look, I understand Jay's desire for tonight. I'm all for it. I love Jay, but you know I can't just push Johnny out. His 30th anniversary is in 2 years. Kushnick rolls her eyes. Here's what I can do. Tartikoff lays out a plan. NBC will give Leno a big bump to stay on as permanent guest host on Tonight until Johnny retires. Then, Leno steps in. As far as Kushnick is concerned, it's a verbal commitment from someone she trusts. Leno will finally get what he wants.
All right, Brandon. That'll make Jay happy. And I can live with it, but Carson's anniversary isn't until 92. That's a long wait, and that makes me nervous.
Tartikoff shoots her his boyish grin. Come on, Helen. Johnny can't last forever. After Kushnick departs, Tartikoff collapses behind his desk. He's in a strategy quagmire that would challenge even the best chess master. If he's made the right move, Leno will stick around until Carson leaves, despite the fact that no one knows when that'll be. Johnny's been keeping mum. But if there's no set date, Leno may become frustrated and jump to CBS. Then, there's Letterman. He's been doing well at 12:30 for almost a decade and seems content in that time slot. But the unspoken understanding is he'll step in to replace Carson. And Carson himself has made it clear he favors Letterman. Tartikoff worries that if Letterman isn't at least offered the job, he may walk. It's anybody's guess how he'll react if the position is simply handed to Leno. But Tartikoff's guess is it won't be good. And if Letterman does take over tonight, NBC will need someone at 12:30. Could that be Leno? Tartikoff's head is swimming. By the beginning of 1991, Helen Kushnick is getting sick and tired of Johnny Carson. She sees him as the last guest who doesn't know the party's over. It's been over a year since her conversation with Tartikoff. Carson's 30th anniversary is fast approaching, but he hasn't even hinted at a retirement date. If NBC won't step up and give Carson the boot, she'll start the ball rolling herself, so she has an East Coast connection plant a story in the New York Post. On February 11, 1991, the Post breaks the front page news with a bold headline. There goes Johnny, NBC looking to dump Carson for Leno. The story says the network feels he's too old and conservative. He's losing young viewers. Leno attracts that crucial demographic. The affiliates are behind him, and he's ready to take the reins. The Post story reveals no sources, but it rocks NBC to its core and humiliates Carson. And worst of all, it's basically true. An anti-Carson whisper campaign has been building within the network for years, despite the whiff of treason it carries. But Carson is still the king of late night, even if his crown is slipping. Now, executives in Burbank are preparing themselves for some tricky damage control. They've got to release a delicate statement that reassures Carson, the press, and the public that the story's claims are untrue, but without saying he'll have the job indefinitely. When Kushnick reads the story to Leno over the phone, he's puzzled. Why would NBC come down on Johnny like that? Kushnick denies she had anything to do with it. Some mystery faction is out to get him. But Leno is non-confrontational. He's not an industry shark. He's a comedian. He hangs up wondering if this might hurt Johnny. and how it might hurt his own chance for The Tonight Show. So he's going to find out. You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. We get support from Court. You know, the way people work is changing and the workplace itself needs to change too. But what if flexibility wasn't just an option? With Court's flexible furniture solutions, you can create agile work environments that become your team's greatest advantage. Save capital with swing spaces, attract top talent with collaborative environments, and create connected spaces that employees will love. Flexibility is the future, and Court Furniture Rental helps you embrace it. Learn more at Court, that's CORT.com/office. February 12, 1991, Beverly Hills, the day after the New York Post story broke. Jay Leno sits in his living room. He's usually a mellow guy, but not right now. His brow is furrowed and his guts are twisting as he stares at the phone. He's got to make a call, and he's dreading it. Finally, he grabs the phone and dials Johnny Carson's home number.
Hello?
Oh, hi, Johnny. It's Jay.
What can I do for you, Jay?
Look, I hate to bother you, but I just wanted to say I had nothing to do with that story in the New York Post.
Is that right?
I know you think Helen planted it. I've heard those rumors, too, but I asked her point blank, and she swore to me it didn't come from us. I have no clue where it came from.
Carson pauses, then continues, his familiar voice ice cold.
It came from you.
Johnny, maybe your people are telling you that, but seriously.
Listen, you're a good guy, Jay. But you need to be very careful about who's speaking for you in this business. Do you understand me?
Well, I...
Goodbye, Jay.
David Letterman has never been a big fan of management. But things got worse in 1986 when General Electric bought NBC's parent company, RCA. Since then, Letterman has unloaded his feelings about GE repeatedly on the air, bouncing his remarks off bandleader Paul Schaefer.
How do you feel about this deal?
I'm thrilled about it.
No, you're not. You hate it.
I heard today that GE originally owned RCA.
We don't care. We don't want to be taken over by GE. What are these knuckleheads going to do when they get in here?
Well, they're going to just, you know...
No, they won't. Look, this is the way I look at it. They're wimps, all right? Listen to this. RCA brought you compatible color television. The first network to broadcast in color was NBC. RCA also brought you the video disc. All right, we'll let them have it. They developed stereo TV. You know what GE developed? The toaster oven!
From Letterman's perspective, GE is a greedy, gutless corporation looking to cut costs anywhere it can, especially with his show, which earns a healthy $55 million in annual revenue. The chronic complaints from the Late Show camp reverberate loud and clear among NBC brass. They don't help his candidacy for The Tonight Show. NBC's entertainment division head Warren Littlefield and head of productions John Agoglia have been frequent targets of Letterman's on-air mockery. In a running gag, he's named them both GE Employee of the Week. And when Littlefield gifts Letterman an expensive crystal decanter, Letterman takes great pleasure in destroying it on air with a hammer. At a March lunch in the NBC dining room, Littlefield and Agoglia weigh Letterman versus Leno. Littlefield taps the table with his fist.
These guys are both huge talents, John, but bottom line, Jay is more gettable, more accessible, and he scores high with the young and older demographics. Exactly what tonight needs.
Agoglia nods. And he's a team player. Jay will do anything. Study market research, schmooze advertisers and affiliates, you name it. Yeah, he's a people pleaser. The polar opposite of Letterman. He's never happy. Everything with that guy is him versus NBC.
I'll admit that Dave is a brilliant comedian, but my fear is his style won't translate to the Tonight Show brand. You can get away with a lot more at 12:30 than you can at 11:30.
Look, Warren, Dave can get downright nasty. That's not why people watch The Tonight Show. It's got to be Leno at 11:30.
By April 1991, Helen Kushnick is at the end of her rope with NBC. The story she planted with the New York Post was personally devastating to Johnny Carson, but it didn't force the network's hand the way she'd hoped. But she's not done with the network chiefs. Now she wants a contract in writing, nothing verbal this time, something stating Jay Leno will get The Tonight Show. She contacts John Agoglia. It's now or never. He's well aware that she can still take Leno to CBS. NBC cannot let that happen. On May 16th, Kushnick and Leno sit down with Agoglia and sign the deal. Leno will be host of Tonight, and Kushnick will be executive producer. As far as NBC is concerned, it's win-win. Letterman will keep his successful show at 12:30, and Leno will assume the 11:30 slot. The only thing is, no one even asked Letterman if he wanted Tonight, and no one consulted Carson about signing Leno as his successor. And then, there's the still unanswered question that remains the key to everything. When the hell will Carson retire? On the next episode, Johnny Carson gives David Letterman some advice that will shake up late-night programming for NBC and CBS. And Helen Kushnick brings her beloved client Jay Leno to the brink of professional destruction.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
From Wondery, this is Episode 3 of Late Night Wars for Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. We use many sources when researching our stories, but we especially recommend Bill Carter's books, The Late Shift and The War for Late Night, and Johnny Carson by Henry Bushkin. I'm your host, David Brown. Peter Gilstrap wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Voice acting by Michelle Philippi. Sound design by Kyle Randall. Our associate producer is Kate Young. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients. Popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.